The Anton Savage Show
with Kiries.ie
on News Talk.
It has been an interesting period in relation to UK-Irish relations, with the British Prime Minister citing what the Taoiseach Micheál Martin said in respect of immigration as proof that the Rwanda policy is working, because Micheál Martin said that there was a significant influx, obviously, of people seeking immigration who had come in through Northern Ireland. And that's attested to in some of the coverage in the papers this weekend. And of course, Rishi Sunak used that as proof that the Rwanda policy yet to formally kick in, because flights are not yet leaving, but the threat of it, in his view, was sufficient to be forcing people to head for Ireland rather than heading for the UK, which of course has led to the issue in Ireland, where we have had Helen McEntee saying that legislation is going to be firmed up to send those who do come here seeking asylum back to the UK by designating the UK a safe country. Now the former Attorney General Micheál Martin, or rather Michael McDougall, has weighed into this, saying that there are serious question marks over the government's attempt to provide a quick legislative fix. The Irish Daily Mail reporting that the whole thing, says McDougall, may be academic. Strasbourg Court has ruled that onward travel to Rwanda is in breach of our conventions, and therefore it is a moot point whatever legislation we put in place, because international conventions would prevent it coming to fruition. It makes for a very tense environment between the UK and Ireland. To look at just how tense, we have with us Daniel Mulhall, former ambassador of Ireland to the US, UK, Germany and Malaysia, and Adam Bolton, veteran Sky News broadcaster and journalist. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning. Anton.
Let me start, Adam, with you to get the view from the UK. Rishi Sunak is touting what has happened in relation to the Irish immigration numbers as evidence of the Rwanda policy being a success. Is that playing well in the UK? Adam,
it's not playing at all in the UK. It's not playing at all in the UK. I think, frankly, what one can say is that it was a blunder, basically, by Rishi Sunak to make this claim. He is not very good at politics. That's the cliche about him. He was asked this question in the context of a pre-election interview. As you know, we've just had local elections in this country. And he grabbed at it to claim that the asylum policy was working. Well, as you pointed out, it's not in place yet. In fact, the upsurge in people going into Ireland predates, it goes back several years, and predates Britain even contemplating this Rwanda policy. He was clumsy in what he said. And I have to say, your Justice Minister, Helen McEntee, has been clumsy as well in making these claims, which really can't be substantiated on the basis of the figures. So the British would certainly not like to make an issue of this. They've said that it's not a good idea to send police to the border. On the other side, I think Michael McDougall has probably got it right.
Is it not red meat to Rishi Sunak's base? I mean, we have seen people emerging, particularly some of the former cabinet who are now on GB News, emerging to say, here is evidence of success. This is us taking control as we said we would during Brexit. Whatever about the truth of it, is the politics not effective?
No, the politics is not effective, because what this leads to is people, including Jim McAllister of Traditional Ulster Voice and some British politicians on the far right talking about, well, you know, it's the Irish's fault for wanting an open border. Wouldn't it be a good idea if we could close the border? Now, that is certainly not something that the British government, even the Conservative government, remotely wants to contemplate, given the position it's taken in the Windsor Agreement and also previously, of course, in the Belfast Agreement. So this is a spat and a mess of, I would say, not very clever politicians trying to score points. And as I say, it is not something that has been taken up by the British government, or indeed to any great extent by the British media, because they can see the logical and political flaws in this idea of moving people across borders. I mean, it is true that there is cooperation between the Irish and the British on monitoring common trade, common travel area, which of course predates Brexit and everything else. But that is about identifying wrong'uns who shouldn't be in the common area, not about moving people from one side of the common area to the other.
Well, in relation to that, Dan Mulhall, I might bring you in respect of the kind of tensions that are developing, because the front of the Irish Times today reports that the UK has accepted that it would take back just over 200 migrants under a 2020 agreement with Ireland, but not a single one has gone back. Meanwhile, we have been asked to take back 1,800 migrants who have gone through to the UK, and we've taken seven. That doesn't look like a well-functioning diplomatic system.
Well, look, the problem here is that there are no simple solutions to these complex problems. This is a global problem, right? I mean, there's just been a surge in asylum seekers the world over. I mean, the United States is having a huge problem on its border. People are willing to travel across the Mediterranean, risk their lives in leaky boats. Small boats are arriving in Britain. So when people say close the border, that's all very well and good. But closing the borders doesn't work in today's world, because people will get around these. And I don't think anybody in their right mind thinks that there's any border that could conceivably be erected on the island of Ireland that would prevent people from crossing that border, because the border is so open. You can walk across fields. There are so many roads that could not be manned. So therefore, this notion that we can just close the border is a nonsense. And the idea that we can send people back in large numbers is also not very sensible, because, you know, first of all, there's a process that you have to go through. And then when you do decide you want to send people back, well, where do you send them to? And obviously, you know, we could not send people back to Britain without the British government agreeing. I suspect that the two governments will be willing to accept transfers back and forth, but it's not going to solve the problem, because the problem is much bigger than could ever be resolved by moving people back and forth between Britain and Ireland. Unfortunately, this has become a political football, particularly in Britain. And I thought that the comments of Rishi Sunak last Friday were really quite dreadful, because he almost implied that it was the British government's wish to encourage asylum seekers to move from Britain to Ireland via Northern Ireland.
Oh, I think Dan, I'd suggest you're being generous in saying he almost implied. I mean, he very clearly implied that was the success.
I mean, look, I'm not going to accuse him of that kind of behaviour, but certainly you could definitely interpret his comments as gloating and being gleeful about the prospect of people fleeing Britain because of the Rwanda policy and moving to Ireland. By the way, if this was a political manoeuvre on the part of Prime Minister Sunak, it seems to have failed quite miserably, given the results of the local elections that were held on Thursday, where the Conservatives seem to have lost almost half the seats they were contesting.
Well, I want to get both your views on the impact of those local elections in just one second. But before that, Dan, putting back on your ambassadorial hat, how do you scoop this back into the bottle? I mean, when you have relations as fractured as they now appear to be, with fairly significant public statements being made on both sides, how do you gradually calm that?
We've been here before many times. And my suggestion is that both sides need to calm down. They need to get officials to talk to each other quietly, under the radar, come up with some moves that can be announced that will assuage some of the public concern. As I said, it won't solve the problem. But certainly, we have had many, many spats in the past, in the course of my 40-plus years working in the Irish Foreign Service. There have been many times when when relations have really been in a doghouse, and we've always managed to bring them back onto an even keel. In fact, I thought that this week when the Hon Martin met Eden Harris, the Northern Ireland Secretary at the British-Irish Intergovernmental Conference, that the two of them came out and said, you know, all the right things. We have to look at this. We have to find a solution. You know, there's no point in Britain and Ireland yelling at each other through a megaphone. We are neighbours. We have a huge number of things in common. I can remember going back to the 1980s, even when I was in India, there was a lot of cooperation between our respective immigration services. So we have a common travel area, which is a huge benefit to both countries, and both countries value it greatly, and it is an asset to it. And we have to preserve that common travel area. It's now being challenged by a new phenomenon, which is the very significant rise in asylum seekers, which is a global phenomenon, but is affecting Britain and Ireland, and we need to deal with that. We need to find solutions that can actually solve the problem, or at least mitigate some of its consequences.
You mentioned the local elections, and obviously that's a fairly current, direct measure of how effective the government, the UK government's current policies, or at least how popular the UK government's current policies are. Let's have a little look at that. And Adam Bolton, you might give us your initial take, because from this distance, it looks like the Tories had a certain part of their anatomy handed to them.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I would just endorse entirely what the ambassador said. And I would point out that what Rishi Sunak said, electioneering, is not UK government policy. Saying that the policy is working and it's leading to people crossing the Irish border. Indeed, the day after or a few days after he said it, Britain had record number of crossings into the UK coming across the Channel. As far as the elections go, they are a dramatic result. The Conservatives have lost more than half their seats. They've failed to take mayoralties in areas which would be described as true blue. What the results really do is suggest that British and public opinion is where opinion polls have been saying it is for the past 2 years, that people are fed up with the Conservative government, that Labour is on course to form the next government, but that there are also attractions of third parties, notably the Liberal Democrats and the Greens, and to a lesser extent, Reform, for voters as well. And one of the worries that the Labour Party has is that had the votes been cast yesterday in a general election, which of course they weren't, Labour would be struggling to have an overall majority, which just shows how well Boris Johnson won the general election in 2019 and what a mountain there is for Labour to climb to form a majority government. But overall, you're absolutely right. This is bad for the Conservatives and good for the opposition parties, what we've seen. Although, interestingly, we're going to get key mayoral elections today in Manchester, in the West Midlands, and in London. In the West Midlands, there could be good news for the Conservatives. Andy Street, former boss of John Lewis, may well hang on in spite of being a Conservative. And there are some worries that because of very low turnout and differential turnout in London, it could be a bit more of a squeaker for Labour's Sadiq Khan than was expected.
Nonetheless, though, and Dan, through our eyes, when you're used to proportional representation, the first-past-the-post system does lend itself to fairly significant swings. But we're looking at a loss so far of 450-plus, I think, Conservative seats, a gain of something similar for Labour twice the size of the Tories now in terms of council representation. All of that would look like very much wind behind Keir Starmer's back, so much so that he's now renewing calls for an early general election because he sees this as such a crushing defeat. Is he right? Dan, are you there?
Yeah, look, I mean, I obviously, Adam's the far better judge of British politics and British electoral prospects than I am. But, I mean, all the evidence seems to me to point to the very strong likelihood that Labour will win the next election. If you look at the by-election, for example, the Reform UK did pretty well. They almost reached the same level as the Conservatives. And if they are to stand in a whole range of constituencies around Britain in the general election, that could deprive the Conservatives of quite a few seats they otherwise might probably expect to win. So I would say that the prospects of a Labour government are quite good. I think the main reason is not to do with anything other than the fact that the Conservatives have been in power for so long. And I think people have maybe reached the point where they're looking for a change and they'd like to see a new broom and a new set of faces and voices running the British government.
Just on that, Adam, how much do you think is, as Dan describes it, a desire for a new broom and that sense of fatigue? And how much of it is rooted in dislike of specific policies of the Tory government?
I think Dan's analysis is absolutely correct. We've had a Conservative government of one sort or another for 15 years now, and people are fed up, not least because of the cost of living crisis. Yes, there are great concerns about immigration, illegal migration, and the rest of it as well. But overall, what is fascinating about this election compared to going back to 1997 when Tony Blair came in, is that it is difficult in the polling to find positive enthusiasm for Sir Keir Starmer. He has negative ratings as well as, not as bad as, but as well as Rishi Sunak. But in every policy area at the moment, British voters are saying that they would go with Labour rather than with the Conservatives. And I think that is a reflection that they're fed up. And don't forget, we've had five Conservative prime ministers in the past 15 years. We've had, I think, three changes and possibly talk of a fourth change without an election in prime minister since 2019. And so people have undoubtedly lost confidence in the Conservatives, and they have undoubtedly not warmed to the leadership of Rishi Sunak.
And I assume, by the way, Adam, that the Keir Starmer demand for an early election, while it may fill a couple of column inches, there isn't a prayer of it happening.
Yeah, well, he's been saying that for at least a year now. And obviously, he's re-emphasized it. The Liberal Democrats have said it as well. But it is, frankly, in the control of the government, and particularly in the control of Rishi Sunak, the only way he could have an election was if his own party was going to force it, either perhaps by challenging his leadership, which was a possibility going into these elections. But it doesn't appear that there is a mood to do that. And certainly there are very few Tory turkeys ready to vote for Christmas. I mean, they would put it off as long as they can. So that means, I think, barring major political accidents, we can look probably to November for the next British general election.
Adam, thanks very much for your time this morning. Likewise, thank you to Dan. That's Adam Bolton, veteran Sky News broadcaster and journalist, and Daniel Mahal, former ambassador, our former ambassador to the US, the UK, Germany and to Malaysia.
The Anton Savage Show
with Kiri's.ie
on News Talk.